The News Run on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Welcome along to tonight's Off the Ball. It's Mick McCarthy here with you until 10 o'clock. Owen Sheehan, so disgusted by Kerry's performance on Saturday, he's had to take the day off. So, along with Kerry's nightmare, though, there was also some last-second heartbreak for Mayo, who go out of the Championship, and some late Shane Walsh brilliance from Galway, which keeps them alive for another week at least. Colin Boyle and Mike Quirk are going to give us their analysis later on tonight. Crisis, what crisis for Leinster? A four-year trophy drought ended with a comfortable win over the Bulls in Croke Park on Saturday. Brian O'Driscoll will be here with us for a rare Monday night rugby appearance after 8 o'clock. And JJ Spahn is your surprise 101 US Open champion, but a lot of drama to get there. We'll talk about the US Open with Lawrence Sonigan later this hour. Stephen Doyle is here with us, as he always is on a Monday for the News Run. Steve-o, how are you?
Evening, Michael. Very upset by the absence of our Kerry colleague.
He just couldn't take it, you know.
Unbelievable, isn't it? One defeat and that's it.
Nathan Murphy is live with us from Drogheda tonight, where he's going to be watching a big game between Drogheda United and Shamrock Rovers, and some big news for Drogheda, which we'll be talking about in a couple of minutes. But Nathan, Owen texted me to say to revisit our conversation about leaving early from games from a couple of weeks ago. That's how bad Kerry were. But no matter how much pain Owen is going through today, it's nothing compared to your good self and all of the people of the County of Mayo who thought they had done enough until they just didn't do enough.
Yeah, snatching despair from, was it joy or was it just pure relief that we felt when Fergal Boland kicked that equalising point, and I sort of assumed that Donegal would do the right thing and just wind down the clock, kick it out of play, the hooter was gone, everybody goes home happy, let's meet again on the last Sunday in July, let's give the people of Ireland what they want in another Mayo Donegal All-Ireland final. But obviously they thought otherwise. Fierce disappointing, and ultimately a very underwhelming season from Mayo.
Yeah, it is crazy though, isn't it, that like that Mayo like do seem to just bring this drama wherever they go. So you look at the history books and think underwhelming season, but of course they had to do it in like. And I'm actually not even being flippant here. Like it's both brilliant and terrible as well. Like Mayo, from a neutral's point of view, I think should always be proud of their team that they always remain so relevant and it's always in such kind of like dramatic circumstance, because there's nothing worse than being a team who kind of like fluter out of the Championship without anybody even noticing them. So, like, you know, it is a compliment in its own way, but how is it that they just seem to be always on the wrong side of these things? And it's like, right, this was the most amazing weekend of Gaelic football that I can ever remember, and the headline has to be Mayo heartbreak. How is that even possible?
Yeah, it's that addiction to drama, isn't it? That just seems to maintain regardless of the quality of team. They've always had this thing for really the last 15 years of mirroring the opposition and their level of performance. So when they're taking on a team maybe of lesser stature, they seem to fall down to that quite often. And we've seen that consistently this season. But when they need to raise their game, they're also capable of doing that. And how you put together this run of three performances this season, I've no idea, in the group stage, where like they just did not turn up against Cavan. And obviously that is what's cost them in the end here. And that's just in a complete contrast to what they did over the last two games, where two of the potential contenders for the All-Ireland, they were more than a match for them for long periods of games. So there's a level of inconsistency there, but an underlying consistency that they're never that far away. And I even go back to last season. You look at maybe three crucial games, Galway, Dublin, Derry, across the Championship. And in all three of them, I think they were maybe leading on 70 minutes and end up not winning any of them. So
yeah, the Dublin game was the exact same as this.
Of a lot of... Yeah, they're coming on the wrong side of a lot of very tight games. I don't think there's been any huge belief around Mayo all year that they quite had it in them to win an All-Ireland. There was always a sense that they could probably beat a contender in a knockout game. Whether they could beat two or three of them in a row, I'm not quite sure. But it's not even that, as you say. It's just this relentless drama. Like, they couldn't go quietly yesterday, even though it felt as though they were nowhere near their best and their attacking play was just so poor at times. A summer where Gaelic football has come alive, like the game yesterday was the complete opposite to that, yet still somehow at the end we have this remarkable scenario where Donegal go straight downfield and just kick this brilliant point, and they didn't even need to kick it, but they still just did it to get that dagger through the heart.
Yeah. Can I just say though as well, I felt with Mayo yesterday that, and I know everybody keeps saying, well, the Cavan game was, that was the game ultimately that put them out, but they were level at the very end of the match. They kicked that point, that bowling point, which was brilliant, and from there you've got to have two or three leaders within your team that say, right lads, delay the kick out, stop whatever player it is getting over the halfway line, you kill your granny. Yeah. To stop Donegal getting the ball forward and getting that point to give them the win, and they didn't. And that was I just could not believe that ball got from the Donegal end to the Mayo end so quick for Moore to get that point to win the game for Donegal. It was absolutely terrible. And the other thing as well, a lot of people are lauding Michael Murphy's for his performance, and absolutely so. Could I just say as well, because the man gets an awful lot of criticism, Aidan O'Shea was immense yesterday. There was some of his, just his, what you might say, playmaking ability yesterday were really on display. There was two or three lads hanging out of him every time, and he still managed to hand pass the ball or kick past the ball away to a teammate. And I thought he gave an inspirational performance for his team yesterday, and he should really be praised. It's disappointing for him that he goes out in a match like that. But I think what we also found out over the weekend, ultimately, there's only three teams really, I think, can win the All-Ireland this year.
I disagree with that completely.
Like, we've been going on about this Open Championship. It's not open. It's Kerry, Galway or Armagh. They're the three potential winners.
Sure, Kerry were beaten, hammered out the gate by Meath.
Yeah,
how
absolutely.
Could you put them
but
in
they still, where, you never,
why
you
are,
never
are,
like Kerry.
Why are like Tyrone out of it?
Well, Tyrone have a chance. I think Monaghan have a chance as well. But I think that
Monaghan were far too leaky against Down for me. But again, I wouldn't rule them out, and they're in the quarter final. And I think that Donegal can absolutely. I wouldn't fancy anybody to beat Donegal. I'm not saying that I would fancy them to win the All Ireland. But on a given day,
I think Louth could beat Donegal.
Ah, Steve, no chance.
Yep. I'm watching phases of Donegal's play yesterday, and they're going from one side of the pitch to the other.
Absolutely,
just
they're
recycling
not perfect.
The ball, and Louth will absolutely lap that up. They love teams playing
in front
of them.
Did you not put Dublin in that category?
No, I don't think Dublin have an All-Ireland in them. Absolutely not. Dublin don't have the forwards to win an All-Ireland this year.
This is like, I don't know if I've ever sat in the studio with you with such an opposite feeling of what you're saying. You're coming at me here. I don't know how you're putting Kerry into that bracket if you're not putting
David
Dublin
Clifford,
and you're not putting Tyrone.
Kerry have much better forwards than Dublin have.
Yeah, but none of them are playing at the moment except for Clifford. They're all injured. Now, I do think that most of them will be back, but it doesn't seem to have clicked with Kerry. But look, what I was going to say, though, was it was an unbelievable weekend of football. Like, if you go back to even it starting off with Cork and Roscommon, that was the televised game. It was good. It was a fine, close game until it kept you interested until the end. Meanwhile, not on TV, Kerry were being humiliated by Meath, who are a story in themselves, and they're full of two-pointers, and they've beaten Dublin and Kerry so far this season, which hardly any teams have done in history in the same season. Mm. Meath have done it once before, but not too many more. And, you know, you went into that then to the GA Plus games on Saturday night, where you were trying to flick between the two of them. Two of the best games of football I can remember. Mm. It seemed like Dublin and Derry was going to be the classic. It was 13-all at half time. Then Galway come from nowhere to come back and turn that game into a classic. And Shane Walsh gets the point at the end. Mm. Like, I mean, he's such a beautiful striker at the ball. You kind of knew he had scored that the second it left his boot. That's fine. But even in the previous, some of the scores by Walsh, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody kick a ball more beautifully from play than the way Shane Walsh does. When he connects with when he connects with them perfectly, they soar.
Yeah.
And how that can be accurate at the same time, I just don't know. And it's a joy to watch. So that was amazing. Rob Finnerty was incredible in getting Galway back into that game as well. So you had that, and then you move on to yesterday, and it's like, right, Grant, Monaghan and Down, Louth and Clare, that group's not that interesting. Mm. That's the kind of lesser one. I was watching the Clare Cork unbelievable All Ireland minor hurling semi final, which Clare won. Which, by the way, I can't. I'm just in awe by the standard of under 17 hurling. Like, it's insane that these children are as good as they are, you know. But anyway, you move on, and so you missed the first maybe 15 minutes of the Down game, and it's an unbelievable game.
Yeah.
And there's goals all over the place, and I think the scoreline at half time was something like 116 to 115. It's like, that's not the way football's meant to be played. You know, even Clare have a bit of a comeback in that game. And then you have the drama that we mentioned. The only game that didn't have anything was the Tyrone-Cavan game. And Tyrone got 31 points in that game. again showing the how football has come on. So I don't know what's going on, Nathan, but it feels like this much maligned sport has gone from, you know, this kind of like, will we even bother having a football championship next season, to this is the greatest sport in the world. There's been no in between.
Yeah, you can change every rule in the book, but unfortunately it's still not going to end up Mayo's long wait for an All-Ireland.
Ah, not everything's about Mayo.
Yeah, it is. It is in my mind. It certainly is in my mind. Yeah, it is. It's the most insane turnaround I've ever seen. And listen, the Football Review Committee deserve an enormous amount of credit for managing to get all of this through so quickly. As you say, I was at last year's All-Ireland football final, and it was dull. It lacked tension. It lacked everything you would expect from a game of that magnitude. So to go from that to already having countless games better than anything we've seen in recent years is a little bit mad, and it feels somewhat unprecedented in sport. I know people are talking about maybe changes they've made to baseball in the last few years, but this feels like the Gaelic football that we sort of talk about it being for many years, but it never actually has been. I'm still not fully in agreement with the constant changing of rules while the championship is ongoing, which to me undermines a little bit that they, once championship started, they should have just settled on this is it for this year and we review afterwards. And the fact that they're still changing some of the decisions of the referees now seems a bit bizarre. But yeah, it's incredibly exciting heading into what's to come over the next month. And the fact, if it's been this good so far, imagine how it's going to be now that we're heading into a real hot, warm spell with the best teams left on the biggest pitches.
I agree. And I think that that's not ideal, but it's the cost of doing business when they had to get them through so quickly. And hopefully that will all be sorted for next year. But I have to say, there was a moment, it was on Saturday night watching those games and just thinking how thrilling they were, how high scoring, how much they had. And you think the rules are coming along at a good time, in that there is a relative parity, despite what Steve-O says, in Gaelic football that we probably haven't had in a long, long time, where anyone can beat anyone. That's coincidence that that's come along with the rules. But also, you know, there was times on Saturday night where I was thinking, like, have we given Jim Gavin enough credit for the fact that he just went away after winning 5 All-Irelands or whatever, 6 All-Irelands with Dublin, went away and then, you know, reinvented the sport?
I know,
like,
yeah.
Like, such and seemingly, look, everyone will nitpick and everyone will have number the one two. They don't like, but in general has made it unbelievably better. It's an it's an incredible thing. But there was a moment, actually, sorry, in the Cork-Ross Common game that nobody will remember, and it, like, again, it wasn't the highlight of the week, but Cork won the ball back basically in the small square almost. And quick forward pass to probably a wing back who had another quick forward pass to, like, a midfielder who had a quick forward pass to the corner forward who was one-on-one and scored a brilliant point. And it was like, that score did not exist in football last season. Yeah. It was three medium length kicks up the field immediately, and a score, a one-on-one score, like a bit of skill with forward versus defender. And it's just like, it's a joy to watch.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's been brilliant. And Jim Gavin, like, it's not, I would still say he doesn't get enough credit for what he did with that Dublin team over the years, because, you know, and listen, I can understand people's point of view when they argue about the finances and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the further we get away from what that Dublin team did, the 5 in a row under Jim Gavin, I think more and more people will realise how special the players were, how special the manager was in keeping them at the top for so long, and not just, you know, beating teams, but hammering teams. And it wasn't all just down to inequity in regards to finances and facilities.
No,
and
it was
all that
a special
kind of
group, of course. A special
manager who has gone on since, as you say, to revolutionise the game, and it's gone well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of texts. Lads, Donegal had the fitness edge over Mayo in the closing minutes, especially the final point, says John in Limerick. Not sure it was fitness so much as just not being ready for that sort of onslaught from Moore. As a Mayo man, I say we got what we deserved. Disrespected Cavan, and yesterday were afraid to take a risk. Numerous times they passed backwards from inside the 21, says Fergal. I think a lot of Mayo fans feel that way, especially about the taking of risks, especially in the first halves of games. I'd say that when Joyce looked down at the teams in the quarterfinal draw, he would have hoped for down now to beat them. says Patrick. And that is interesting. Galway definitely need to show a 70-minute game. Anyway, that's the football. We'll be back with Colm and Mike Quirk, Colm Boyle and Mike Quirk, after 9 o'clock tonight. Really, really brilliant hour of radio waiting for you there. The news round with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. And big news, Steve-O, from Drogheda, where Nathan is tonight.
Yes, indeed. The Premier Division club is out of the UEFA Conference League. They have been unsuccessful with their appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. United qualified for the Conference League by winning last year's FAI Cup final. Not long after that success, the club's 100% owners, the Travella Group, purchased an 80% stake in Silkeborg. The Danish club also qualified for the Conference League after winning a European playoff against Randers on June 1st. Under UEFA club rules, clubs with the same owners cannot compete in the same competition. Travella's legal case was based mainly on communications failures, they argued, from UEFA. The June 1st deadline for clubs to restructure ownership models was brought forward to March this year, and they argued they hadn't received direct communications in relation to this. This appeal fell on deaf ears to Cass this morning, so the club will miss out on roughly at least €500,000 in prize money, and no other Irish club can take their place in the competition.
Yeah, it's a real pity, Nathan.
Well, it's more than that, I think. It's a disaster for Drogheda United. And as they said in their statement, a mix of heartbreak and disbelief. You're going back a hell of a long way for the last time Drogheda United were in Europe, all the way back to 2013, 2014. These days and those sort of nights are rare enough for a club and a town of this size. And it was the one thing post winning the FAI Cup that all Drogheda United supporters were looking forward to, was a chance, never mind looking to challenge for a title as it seems they might be able to do this season. It was getting to play European football and all the nights that might follow, and for that to be taken away from them at this late stage with the draws to take place tomorrow is going to be a very, very bitter pill to swallow. And particularly when you look at the case they put forward, that ultimately they feel this all comes down to a changing of dates and timings as to when you had to prove that you had put in place a change of ownership structure. It was the 3rd of June. It was moved to the 1st of March. Drogheda claiming that they weren't aware of that change. As Stephen said, when they won the FAI Cup back in November, it was a couple of weeks after that that Travella bought Silkeborg. It was only then in June that Silkeborg actually qualified for Europe, and this became an issue. And listen, Travella are clearly wealthy owners, but for any League of Ireland club, the loss of a minimum of €525,000 is just enormous. And there's no doubt, I think, here in Drogheda this evening, it casts a massive shadow over this game.
The other thing, Nathan, and I'm sure you've seen some of the noise from supporters of opposition teams who may be kind of telling Drogheda United, well, you know, this is kind of tough luck because you did decide to bring in a private ownership model. Like, they obviously have Travella Group also on Walsall, and Drogheda United have benefited from that particular partnership because they obviously brought in Douglas James Taylor. He scored the penalty in the FAI Cup final last year, and they also brought in Alicia Ahui, who was on loan from Walsall as well, and he was man of the match in the Cup final. So you could argue that the partnership that they have within this Travella Group benefited them on the pitch with bringing these players in. So it's kind of like, you know, a bit of tough luck in the end as well.
Can I just ask one more question on the back of that, Nathan? Was Drogheda's decision to go full-time this year, which obviously they were the last Premier League club to, or Premier Division club to do so, was that in any way related to the fact that they were going to be in Europe this year, or was that a done deal anyway?
I think it was coming anyways, and the decision with Travella had been made for that to happen, but I'm sure it was also done on the understanding, and certainly I'm sure their wage budgets and all of that were done on the understanding that there was the minimum of €500,000 going to be coming into the club this summer, and that's now gone. So as to what it means in terms of their finances and potential reinforcements in the transfer window and all that, we'll ask Kevin Doherty after the game. I think the plan was always for Drogheda to go full-time if they wanted to compete and compete properly in the Premier Division. The club has been making massive steps forward. And as I say, Travella will be able to take that hit. They may not want to take that hit, and we all know the way business works is that it will be the front line who are the ones who face the brunt of that. So I think it'd be naive to feel that there's going to be no impact at all on Drogheda United as a football club for missing out on this. Stephen, I think you're obviously right that the benefits of the multi-club model have been massive for Drogheda United, particularly with Douglas James Taylor and the form that he showed in the second half of last season. But that's also modern football, and while there are community clubs and your own club Bohemians are doing a very good job at it, you look at Sligo Rovers, who I think have made it very clear in recent months just how difficult it is to go and keep on investing and keep on competing at the top, and they're seeing the issues with that now, with the struggles they're having this season. Like, Drogheda United obviously felt there was only so far they could go as a community club. They wanted this investment. There'll always be questions about any ownership and what their long-term intent is. And again, it's not necessarily the multi-club ownership that has been the problem here. There are ways around this. We'll see it in tomorrow's draw. There'll be lots of clubs with multi-club ownership, and there's ways around it, and there's blind trusts, and there's temporary sales of shareholdings, and all this sort of loopholes, essentially. But loopholes that clubs around Europe are taking advantage of. The problem for Drogheda is they basically didn't get the paperwork in time to take advantage of those loopholes. And again, their claim was that when the dossier had initially been sent out, that it wasn't relevant to them. I think not only had they not won the cup, Silkeborg hadn't even been a part of Trivella's partnership, never mind even qualifying for Europe. And then some questions as to whether or not, when a reminder was sent out, that actually ever found its way to the club. But it's done now. When you go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, it is just that. You agree in advance that you're going to accept the decision, and the draw is now going to take place tomorrow without them. I know last week there was hope within the club that they might still get the prize money. That always felt like it was going to be a non-runner. And ironically, one of the beneficiaries of this could well be Shamrock Rovers, because there is something of an expectation that Shamrock Rovers are now going to get Drogheda United's place in the second round. So Shamrock Rovers, even though they're going to be seeded all the way through the Conference League, they are going in the first qualifying round. But when they make the official announcement tomorrow of the groups, there is an expectation that Shamrock Rovers may actually get Drogheda United's place and go straight through to the second qualifying round.
Yeah, small thing that isn't worth talking about right now, but the UEFA rules that value the league placings over the team that actually won the cup, meaning that Drogheda were ranked below and lost the place, I think are ridiculous as well. But that was never an issue today, I suppose. But they have to play a pretty big game tonight, Steve-O, under the cloud of all this.
Yeah, first place third in the SSE Airtricity Men's Premier Division. Leader Shamrock Rovers go to a United side with the joint second best defensive record in the league for that reason. Rovers head coach Stephen Bradley admits they're facing a really tough challenge at Sullivan and Lamb Park.
Good win on Friday. What's important, we move on now and focus on what will be a difficult game against a very good Drogheda team who are having a great season. So we know we've got to be at our best to go there and get 3 points. Drogheda have been excellent. There's no getting away from that. They've been very, very good. They are where they are because that's where they deserve to be. They've been brilliant. And we know that we've got to be ready for that. They're very, very good at what they do.
Yeah, it's a 7:45 kickoff. At the same time, a Dublin derby between St. Pat's and Shelburne. Both sides failing to win last Friday. The champion Shell's just 3 points behind the Saints, who start the night in fourth.
Yeah, Nathan will have updates from Drogheda over the course of the night. It felt like Friday night's win for Rovers was pretty significant, Nathan. It felt it puts them in the kind of place that you sort of think they'll only kick on from here now. It sort of feels like Rovers are back in that sort of dominant position that we got used to them being in.
Yeah, they certainly are, and they're unbeaten in 9 games. I think it's 1 defeat in 16. That was defeat to Bohemians on Easter Monday, and really they've just been getting better and better and better, and the injury issues that they had at the start of the season are almost all corrected now. You look at Trevor Clark has come in tonight. It's his first start of the season. He adds an extra dimension to them out on the wings. They've reinforcements coming in John McGovern already in the transfer window. There might be more to come. And I think if anything, what Stephen Bradley is thinking, the next 3 league games, if they can come through them, if they could win here tonight, they've got Cork City at home on Friday. And then this night, next week, they're in Dalymount Park for what essentially they will probably look at as a bit of a title decider, because if they could win those 3, I think they'll be thinking about Europe then, and that is where their priority will switch to very quickly. But they've been exceptional at times over the past few weeks. I think having Jack Byrne back fully fit is a game changer, is a league changer for them. Now he's on the bench tonight as they try and rotate the squad once again, but they've been a step above everybody else so far. I know Bowes will feel they still have something to say about it, and we haven't even hit the transfer window yet. But this Shamrock Rovers side, with all of that experience, it's hard to see them been brought back into it already.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we'll get updates on that later on. It turns out that if you want a job in football, the thing to do is do a few commentaries, rub shoulders with Nathan Murphy and Stephen Doyle, and you'll probably get a good one.
Yeah, get this, Nathan, hot on the heels of David Moyler's appointment as assistant at Cork City. Another Cork man has landed a big gig. Cardiff City have appointed Brian Barry Murphy as their head coach on a 3-year contract. He arrives from Leicester, where he'd worked under Ruud van Nistelrooy since last December. Barry Murphy's only experience as a first-team manager came with Rochdale, where he finished his playing career from 2019 to 2021. He was involved with Manchester City, of course. And it's not just Cork men that worked in off the ball that are getting big, big gigs or could be getting a gig. Premier League club Brentford are reportedly continuing talks with former Ireland international and coach and off-the-ball contributor Keith Andrews about becoming their new manager. Andrews was set-piece coach under Thomas Frank, who left to take over at Spurs. Other names being linked with that job: Kieran McKenna and Scott Parker. But Andrews, well-regarded and highly tipped by some, to take the reins at Brentford.
Yeah, Andrews, a career of highs and lows. You know, took a long time to make it, then played with Ireland, then, you know, had his ultimate high as the host of the Keith Andrews show, then went, had to go through the ranks of a coach and stuff like that. And now another high as possible Brentford manager in the Premier League. But this is a big job for Brian Barry Murphy, Nathan.
It is. It was potentially in the pipeline around Christmas. I know when Cardiff were sort of assessing their options, he was in the mix just before he took that assistant role at Leicester. And obviously, when you're talking Cardiff, you're not necessarily just talking about the football players. You're talking about the ownership and the issues there with Vincent Tan and how you deal with that. I think the move to Leicester obviously didn't work out, considering it was such a disastrous end to the season. There was probably a feeling from Brian that Ruud van Nistelrooy may not be there for the long haul, and that worst case scenario, they get relegated and then maybe he's in the mix for that, or van Nistelrooy gets a better job and he's in the mix and he's a Premier League manager. It's going to be very hard for any of that managerial team, you'd feel, to stay at Leicester. So to get a championship job, as Stephen said, with Rochdale, his only real managerial experience, I think, shows the reputation that he has in coaching circles. He'd taken a year out or about that for Manchester City to sort of assess his options, and feels like it's a pretty exciting time for Irish coaches. And I think we're going to see a lot more than this. I know from our own personal experience of trying to get co-commentators, almost all of the former players are now going straight into coaching. They're staying in the game, because I think the feeling is, if you step out even for a couple of years, it's very hard to get back into it. So almost all those guys in their mid-30s are going in coaching at a high level. And you look at Conor Howerton is now the Barnsley manager, Brian Barry Murphy at Cardiff. And if Keith Andrews gets that job, it's a quite incredible opportunity. I thought actually that maybe Keith had missed the boat when Thomas Frank went to Tottenham and Keith didn't go with him as his set-piece coach. And you remember the rave reviews he was getting at the start of the season for the way that Brentford were scoring so many goals in the first minute from their kickoffs, from corner kicks. He was very highly rated at Brentford after that disappointing spell as number two to Stephen Kenny. So it would be a big, big step up, but an opportunity of a lifetime for Keith if he could take advantage of it. It does mean, if there's anybody out there who's played football at any level and wants to come work with us for Off the Ball, just drop us an email.
We're almost out of time, as usual, here on a Monday. A couple more stories to get to. Just note that we will have Lawrence Donegan on to talk about the US Open in just a few minutes. And Nathan, I'm sure, will have at least three golf weeklies on the go this week as well, so keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, well, look, just a quick run through the GAA draws, shall we, Mick? The hurling and football draws both made today. So starting with the hurling, Dublin's meeting with Limerick in the quarterfinals of the All-Ireland Championship has been fixed for Croke Park next Saturday. That encounter forms part of a doubleheader with the Dublin footballers meeting with Cork, with the hurling set to throw in at four. The other hurling last eight match between Galway and Tipperary has a 6:15 start at the Gaelic grounds in Limerick. In the All-Ireland Championship preliminary quarterfinals in the football, that Dublin-Cork meeting, 6:15 on Saturday at Croker. Kerry's clash with Cavan throws in at 3:30 at Fitzgerald Stadium. On Sunday, Port Esther plays host to Down's tie with Galway at 1:45 and then there's a fourth throw in Ballybuffet for Donegal and Louth. The Talton Cup semi-finals at Croker next Sunday. Wicklow play Limerick at 2 and Kildare play Fermanagh at 4:00.
These games all being on top of each other on Saturday is just a nightmare, and it's a continuous problem. It happens every year with the scheduling, and yeah, look, I mean, the preliminary quarterfinals aren't kind of what they could have been in football, but at the same time, you don't want to be putting your big game, big knockout games up against the other sports' big knockout games. It's just, the GAA is eating itself.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I'll be at Croke Park, hopefully, for the doubleheader. But I'll tell you one thing, I would be like to be watching Galway and Tipperary as well, but I probably won't get a chance. Anyway, first world problems for me. The Lions, Michael, it's another Leinster man who is providing an injury headache for Andy Farrell after the URC Grand Final win against the Bulls on Saturday. Three of the 12 Leinster Lions are now injury doubts ahead of the pre-Australia test match against Argentina. Tadhg Furlong and Hugo Keenan, well, we knew about those calf injuries that they're nursing ahead of Felipe Contepomi's team's visit to Dublin. But now Jameson Gibson-Park, he was a late withdrawal from the Leinster team before that decider at Croker. Another Irishman has been added to Andy Farrell's coaching ticket to the tour down under. Performance coach Gary Keegan brings a wealth of experience to the setup, of course, having worked with a hugely successful Irish boxing team and Dublin senior footballers, to name just two. Today, kicking coach Johnny Sexton, though, was asked if there's too many Irish players in the squad. Currently 16 players from Ireland, but the former national team captain believes they're there on merit.
Well, Ireland have done pretty well over the last few years, I think. You know, having won the championship last year, having won the Grand Slam the year before. So you're probably looking at form over the last 3 years. With some players, I think the coaches probably look at form over, could be 7, 8, 9 years. It's not just, you know, if you played well in a couple of games in the Six Nations, you know, you can force your way in, but, you know, sometimes you take a bigger picture look with players, and obviously they know the way Andy coaches, they know the system, they know. So it didn't surprise me, because, you know, historically, when there was a Welsh coach and the Welsh team did well, they were a majority of the Welsh team. I think the teams that performed the best in terms of their Six Nations performances, I think they got selected.
Great stuff. We will have Brian Driscoll with us after 8 o'clock to talk about Leinster's win and a little bit more as well. We will have our big Gaelic football review with Colin Boyle and Mike Quirk after 9 o'clock. And up next, we're going to talk to Lawrence Donegan about a dramatic US Open. Nathan, we'll be over with you over the course of the night to see what's going on with Drogheda and Rovers.
Yes, looking forward to it. I'll be tuning into your JJ Spawn chat.
I have a lot of positive things to say about JJ Spawn. So,
yeah, when I left the office on Thursday, Nathan said that JJ Spawn fella won't be at the top of the leaderboard at the end of Sunday.
I'm sure he did.
I'm sure everyone said that. I know nothing about golf.
Nathan, Steve-O.
Magic at the end last night. Enjoy.
Thanks so much.